a good question. It's a good question. It's hard to say that this woman wasn't the highest end. It's hard to say that this woman wasn't on the highest level. It's a good question. The question that Dave's raising is that Yisachar and Zvulun themselves are really, what are you going to say? That Zvulun wasn't on the highest level. It's hard to say that. It's hard to say that. Right? I mean, the idea of Yisachar and Zvulun arrangement really is where that Yisachar and Zvulun, Smach Zvulun, but Seisachar and Yisachar. I'm sorry, I think I had them reversed. But at any rate, it means that Zvulun actually wants Yisachar to accept it. It's a different story. Doesn't mean, see, the point is that it's not that indicate what the Rambam is talking against is where Yisachar has a demand. He says, look, I'm a Talmud Chacham, and I deserve this. See, that's making use of Torah. That's exploitation. But if where Zvulun really feels that he wants to have a share in the Torah, I mean, he comes to Yisachar and he asks him to allow him to have the chance to be a part of the of his Torah, you see, part of the perfection of Torah, that's a different story already. Rambam's not talking about that. That's the arrangement of Yisachar and Zvulun. However, one second, but that doesn't answer the question. Because the question was, it says that tzaddikim and anshei ma'aseh lo yemekab mishamada. That's a problem. But it still clarifies the relationship between Yisachar and Zvulun. The thing I could say is like this. That where the Rambam over there is, what the Rambam means over there is not that inherently it's bad. Because really, what's wrong? I mean, Zvulun is really, he feels that he's the benefactor. Right? He feels he's the benefactor. So he's asking him for an opportunity to have a part of his Torah. That's a, he's not really, Yisachar really isn't accepting anything. What's wrong with it? What's wrong with it? But the pshat is like this, that what the Rambam is talking about is that there is, I one time spoke about this, that there is a an emotional framework of dependency that is a dangerous one. Say, psychologically dangerous. A certain emotional dependency, which is psychologically a dangerous thing, because that removes a person from his relationship to God. That's why it says, Botchem Bar Hashem. See what the Rambam says over there? The Rambam says over there in the end of Schi Matan, he says, Botchem Bar Hashem. Right? What does that have to do with Botchem Bar Hashem? What the Rambam means is like this, that there are some people who in their nature, they have a dependent nature. So really, what they want to do is they want to extend the childhood situation. Right? That's this. In Evid, right? Like, how am I talking about him? Botchem Bar Hashem Baruch Shemo Lo Benedivim. Alright? So Botchem Bar Hashem Baruch Shemo means that they felt that they'll get caught up in the psychological dependent type of situation. That type of mental framework. And that's something which would take a person away from his relationship to God. So that's why they wouldn't do it. That's what the Rambam says. That tzaddikim, gemurim, v'anshei ma'aseh, they wanted to avoid the danger of falling into that situation. You see? But that's midas chasidus. But that's only if a person is suspect to that type of a psychological mechanism. You know what I mean? It's a universal phenomenon. And that's why the Rambam said that tzaddikim gemurim v'anshei ma'aseh wouldn't take it, because they were afraid they're going to fall into that dynamic. But inherently, there's nothing wrong with it. So you have to say that by Yisachar and Zvulun is where there is no danger that the person could fall into that psychological mechanism. Right. And that's a danger. Very prevalent. Of Yisachar and Zvulun, though, by because of that. That's only because of a certain danger. So therefore, if there is, the person feels there's no danger, he's not in that situation where he has a danger, then the institution of Yisachar and Zvulun is good. Why the Rambam himself did it, may have the situation with his brother. The answer is he wasn't worried about that that particular chassan. Chazal war. They pointed to these psychological mechanisms, you know what I mean? These complexes, these psychological complexes, they recognized immediately, they spotted it. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Amazing thing, huh? That's why I say that the that it says in the, why does it say in the Pirkei Avos? It says, Hein Kiblu Mehem and Kiblu Mehem and the whole, why? This is a, it's Chachma. It's Chachma. The answer is that without Mesorah, without the Mesorah, without the Kabbalah of the true system from God, from Sinai, they would never be able to have this type of insight. This type of insight would take generations and generations in terms of expansion of human knowledge of psychology to be able to have such insight into human nature, to spot these different parts of the human psyche. The only reason they were able to do it was because it was Kabbalah, Mesorah, which had philosophically already set up what perfection is. So when you take a look and you learn through the system, you see how the friendship between a Kohen and between Talmid Chacham, you see already ideas of how these things work. That point to these things, then, of course, a great Talmud Chacham could spot it, could understand it. But he would never be able to notice it if it wasn't for the system of Mesorah. That's why our perfection is based upon Mesorah. That's why you always have the same keep in my hand, keep in my hand. Without the Mesorah, there wouldn't be any, the knowledge would not exist without the Mesorah. I said before, there's no, the whole danger was the danger of exploitation. Exploitation does not exist today. You see, practically, does anybody think a person as a teacher is exploiting society? On the contrary. I mean, society is exploiting him. Exactly, right. So you see that the system today is, today's system is different. Yeah, the impression on the contrary is the most nefesh. So we shouldn't have the teacher's salaries raised. Okay. Avos Perek Rishon Mishnah Yudalit Oimer Im Eina Nili Mili Uchani Laatmi Moani Vim Lo Achshav Emasai Rashi, Mena Nili Milikwama, Imlo Akayam Anias and Mitzvos, Mi Mikayam Osom Bishvili. Rambam, what does Rambam say? Rambam says like this, Im Omar, Imlo Eyani Ba'atzmi Hamaorer, Nafshi Lamala, Mi Yira, Shainli Maorer Michutz, Kimosha Biarnu Beperek Hasheni. Va'acha she'bershusi lahatos nafshi le'ezitzad she'erze. Okay, so what does he, what does the Rambam mean? According to the Rambam is saying like this, that she'enli ma'or mi'chutz k'mo she'bi'anu b'perek hasheni. What did the Rambam explain in the perek hasheni? Rambam means the second perek of Shmona Prakim, and over there the Rambam talks about the bechira chafshis. He says, there's nothing external that determines my actions. You know, nothing external determines my actions. That a man is free to choose his own path, whether to do evil or to do good. That's what the Rambam explains. Okay. So what? So that's really Hakol Tzofiv or Shus Nesuna. That's really, it's another Maimar. It means that there's Bechira Chavshis. I mean, so what did Hill came to let you hear that there's Bechira Chavshis? Shani Latzmi money? I mean, it seems to be a combination here. Man and Ili Mili. Shani Latzmi is money. So it seems to be saying a different concept. Rabbeinu Yena has a similar pshat like the as the Rambam. Im lo yachiach atzmi, sha'azareis atzmi b'mitzvais, mili lo yachiach ulazarzein. Ki ziruz acherim tovu lefi shoh. Aval kishi or hodem es atzma v'chol yom v'yom Yosef lachshov machshavos lasos malachas Hashem v'ein shichol lefonov kashaliba chofetz v'hu derech yosho lefnei ish. Okay. Yeah, it's a little bit different to Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that em ein anili mili means that really there are other people that can influence me to do good. However, he says, this wears off. This is something that's not permanent. So he says, in other words, what he means to say is, if you go to someone that gives you a good pep talk, so it'll only help you temporarily. You yourself change yourself, then it's a permanent type of thing. I mean, we have to understand why should that necessarily be so fine? Many times, if you talk to somebody, somebody could help you out, and it could make a permanent change. Many times, you find people are influenced by other individuals, and will make a permanent change in their lives. They decide themselves. All right. So then, if that's the case, if it's because they decide themselves, so then what is this temporary effect? How could you have a temporary effect if you don't decide yourself to accept it? I mean, he says he seems to distinguish between two types of effects. There's a permanent effect, and that's when I need Lee, and then there's a transitory effect where it's ain't I need Lee, right? So what is the? How would you differentiate between these two types of effects? Understanding and integration, then it shouldn't be dependent upon others or yourself. It should simply be a question of whether you understood it or you didn't understand it. Others could give me to understand something, and others, in the situation of others, it's possible I don't understand something. And myself also, it could be a temporary thing, it could be a transient thing. Well, why is it dependent upon others? Why is it others is temporary? Is that there's two reasons why a person does something. And it comes from two sources of the mind, really. One is the reason a person does something is because he wants to achieve a certain goal, and logically he has worked it out that this is the way to achieve that goal. Right? By doing this and this that. Now he has desire for that goal. And he has to decide on which would be the proper measures to take in order to achieve that goal. That's one way that a person can act. There's another way that another reason that a person could do something, and that is not because essentially he wants to attain something from a given situation, but because of the fact that in his mind, in the back of his mind, he pictures how others would be looking at him in this situation, in a certain situation. You see? Right. Yeah. In other words, it's not really that he's concerned with the situation itself, but what is Zira Zacharim? Zira Zacharim means somebody else comes over and he says, hey, how could you do this? This is impossible. Now, why are you temporary? Why are you affected? You're affected because you immediately think of how this person looks at me. See? Yeah, what's this person's perception of me? Now, that has a certain effect. So, it has an effect, but Rabbeinu Yonah says that effect will only be temporary. Because the effect that you think... Yeah. Because what happens is like this. That since your desires are really in the other direction, so the mind will break off that certain individual, will break off that individual, right, from your own identity. And once you have this, break, then you're back to your original desires. See? You're back to your original desires. In other words, Right, that's right. So the temporary effect it has, like a rabbi's drusha. Rabbi's drusha has a tremendous effect on the audience for about a half a minute. Then afterwards, wears off, because then the identification is broken. See? That's the way it works. It's not something that the rabbi has not succeeded in really demonstrating to the people that this is for their good. It's just a type of thing, like a superego type of thing, where, hey, how can you do this? How can you do this? You should picture the rabbi standing in front of you, and naturally you're not going to do it. But then afterwards you're by yourself, and the circle gets a little smaller, the circle of people, the audience gets a little smaller, and you're there alone, and you do what you want. And that's it. You break away the identification with the other person. Because the desire to do what you want. Really, Sigmund Freud one time said, he said that a resolution that comes from the superego is like a drunk's resolution to stop drinking, which lasts as long as he gets till he gets to the next bar. Really? Now, though, that poses a problem to this concept, because the Gemara says that Vayovo Abaiso Lasos Malachto, that Yosef HaTzadik went into the house with Kefar, right? So it says that he actually came. They wanted to live with him, but he saw the most Jukna Shalovin, and that stopped him. The question is, we're saying now that it's only a transitory effect. It seems to have a pretty long, pretty lasting effect. That was how much was it? It was about 20 years later, right? The matter is that a person has a certain concept, a certain image of himself. And the image of himself, a certain image that he has before him, is a very powerful force. That's not a small thing, the image he has before him. That prevents people from doing a lot of things, and in a permanent way. Because most people in their lives do not refrain from doing evil because of knowledge. That, if you had to rely on that, society would be in a very serious state. Right. So most people are prevented by this certain image that they have in front of them, that's what they are, and they can't tolerate. They wouldn't be able to sleep at night if they did something that went against this image. That's the most powerful force. It's not a transitory thing. See? Now, with Yosef, what it means, Dmus Yukna Shaloviv, means precisely that. It means that his father's figure, the figure of the image of his father, was a part of his own identity. That was part of his own image. That's why it had such a powerful effect. You see? It wasn't an extraneous thing. That was part of his own image. And the moment, Vayava Baisa Lasas Malachto, and then he thought to himself, one second, who am I? Where am I? Am I with these? With these Mitzrim? Or no, or do I belong to a different type of creed, different type of situation? And he thought of his father, and he said, no, I can't do this. This is where I am. He identified with his father. That's a very powerful force. That's the most powerful force in life. As a matter of fact, it's so powerful, it even overpowers the greatest desires. Because anyone knows his basic psychology, the id is kept in check and repressed, even to the point of neuroses, by this force. So you see how powerful this force is. Alright? So why does the Rabbeinu Yonah say that it's transitory? It's not permanent? The answer is because he's talking about a person who has to be mezaris himself. What does it mean he has to be mezaris himself? It means he's involved in doing something which apparently this ego ideal, if you want to call it ego ideal, this concept of himself, self-concept, tolerates. Now, if the self-concept tolerates it, you see, then the other people will only be a temporary measure. You see? What they're doing is, they're sort of activating this self-concept by a temporary identification. But you see that the self-concept was doing very well without them when he was doing the Avera. See? In that type of situation, won't work. One second. The case of Yosef HaTzadik was a different story. But Yosef HaTzadik, that was his self-identity. That's what it means. The most Yukon Shalom means that was him. That prevented him. That's the most powerful force. But where, and over there, it wasn't Zira Zacharim. You see, it was himself. His own identity couldn't tolerate doing this. How can I do this action? You see? He thought of his father. Where did I belong? Did I belong with them or with my father? That's the most powerful force. But over here we're talking about a person who could do an Avera, who could tolerate doing an Avera. His self-image tolerates that Avera. Now the question is, how is he going to get out of it? So what's the answer? The answer is Zeros Acherim. Others can activate, can stimulate the self-conscious temporarily. It's a temporary identification, but you see he has his own identification anyways in terms of the performing this activity. He'll just slip back. I mean, temporarily it'll stop him, but then he's going to slip back to his own identity because he has his own identity which can tolerate this activity, you see. The only way, what Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's the only way he could change? Is that's him ain't a nili. It has to be an ili. It means it has to be part of his own self. You see? That's precisely what it means. He's not speaking in terms of whether rational or not right. That's not the point of it. I mean, an ili. That's already a different area. Avid me, avid me. There's different levels of avidas Hashem. But he's talking about the basic concept. It has to be something that's a part of him. You see? It could be his own self-image. But the self-image has to be his. That's the thing. It has to be his. Not that he has one self-image and that the Zira Zacher and the temporarily people, he identifies with this person temporarily. He breaks that identity. We'll break it. It has to be part of his basic identity, like Yosef HaTzadik. That's the way it has to be. Then he'll be able to be successful. Then it'll be permanent. Pshat is really a psychological pshat. What about the Rambam's pshat? What is the Rambam's pshat? Rambam says that it has to do with what I explained before in the second parak, which means that there is bechira chafshis, emein anili mili, bechira chafshis. Before we go to the Rambam, we'll go back to Rabbeinu Yonah. Shani lost me money. Because really, these two things go together. Emein anili mili, ukshani lost me money. All right, let's see. He says like this. He says, "Ukeshaani laatmi," and when I work it out myself, in other words, recognizing the fact that the only road to perfection is an internal change, which is based upon the self. Now he says like this: "Adayin lo uchal lahasig el echad moni elef mimash ani chayav lasas." Still, I cannot reach 1/1,000th of what I have to do. That's very encouraging. Mashlu, umashlu mashal, lamo doma, lamelach shenasan sadeo la'avodav, a king gave his fields to his servants, upasak imon b'shloshim kur l'shana. And he made up with them that they should give him 30, bring him back 30, kur, certain amount, yeah, bushels, whatever, for a year. Tarchu ba, so they worked on it. Harbe vevi lo chamisha kurin, and they brought him 5. Amal hamamelach v'lo pasakim imi b'shloshim kurin. Didn't we make up for 30? Right, 25 missing. Amru lo adoneinu hamelach sada shenasanti lanu zibur yisaisa. This field you gave us was a very poor field. Tarachnu bo harbe, we worked very much in this field. V'lo yin l'cholim lotz many yos mechamisha kurin. We couldn't bring out more than 5. Kach omru lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's unbelievable, Rabbeinu Yonah. This is the way we say before God. Yetzer hara shenasata lanu min ureinuhu. The evil inclination stems from early youth. Shenema Yetze Levo Adam Ramanura. And the whole Freudian psychology really just serves to elucidate that one pasuk. How powerful that pasuk was. Yetze Levo Adam Ramanura. Whole psychoanalysis. Vafilu Kishu Adam Tareach Harbe, and even when a person works very hard, Lasas Hayosher Beni Hashem. Ein adam yochol lahasig elo ledav amot mimasha chayev lasos. He can only reach a very small amount of what he has to do. V'zeo shenema kihu yada yitzreinu zachur ki ofer anachnu. Shim lo mitnei yetzer hara harbe ba'adam afilu b'lo shi yitrach v'yach zoach ha'mitzvah ya'osa me'am harbe kisada idios. If it wasn't for the yetzer hara that was so great, even he would do many mitzvahs. Afilu imlo yitrach pavodat ad masa yetzer menu shim dava aval achshav shi yadeya shafilu im yitrach harbe lo yasigel ha'mit ne yetzer hara shemakalkel gufo kolshkinim lo yitrach Tishar nafsho reikom in amitzvos. Kimo sodas iburias. Im lo yitruch above him lo yizvolan v'yachoshen lo yitzum in a shum dova. Balzenem al sodas yotzul avaitu al kerem adam chosar leiv. Vinei ola kumul al kos poskin mishle. A lazy man's field. So the weeds are growing there and the fence is broken. And they say somach oros acherem v'oros atzmo v'amar. Yemein anili mili v'im lo etrach um oros atzmi Lachzach a mitzvah a shore man rekon. Shafkishanila atzmi v'terech ben eni masig l'chela katan nikama chalakim. Ma eni masig im lo etrach klal. Unbelievable, Reniana, huh? Just based on the emotions of youth. And there's very little change that you could actually make in an individual. Hillel was really talking about the situation of human frustration with regard to perfection. That's where Rabbeinu Yonah learns. That person finds himself in a very strange dilemma. Because, on the one hand, it requires a tremendous effort on his own part in order to improve himself. And on the other hand, that improvement is so minute. It's almost nothing. Why did Hillel tell us this discouraging news? Why didn't he tell us on the contrary? Let us find out later. But meantime, tell us that it'd be a great thing. You make tremendous changes in yourself, become a great tzaddik. Why don't you... Change is very, very minute. It's like this. The fantasy that a person can involve himself in tremendous changes is really a fantasy of the ego. Yeah, it's a fantasy of the ego. It's not true. It's not reality. It's not true. And a person who has true knowledge, especially of himself, on the contrary, every time he makes progress, he will find out that many of the things that he commended himself for are really resultant from sources that are not so commendable. Yeah. Person is really honest. Yes, that's right. As a matter of fact, the person who is really what we would call a great person, see, is a person who recognizes how not great he really is. See? He recognizes the true sources of many of his motivations. And because of that, only a person, there are people who fool themselves. I mean, there's no question about it. People that fool themselves and think they're really very special. But the truth of the matter is, what Hillel is saying is that's not true. It's false. That person has an illusion about himself. He doesn't really understand himself. Has no knowledge of himself. If he really had knowledge of himself, he would see, on the contrary, the more progress he makes, the more he realizes that at bottom, there is a base personality that's responsible for many of the things that he praised himself for. See? That's what. Yeah, it's a very, it's a difficult, it's a very difficult thing to face. No question about it. Why did Hillel really say this? Why did he teach us this? Why did he teach us this? He taught us this for one reason, because he did not want a person to strive for false reasons. Which is, if a person strives in Yadus because he wants to have this feeling that he's great and he really has made tremendous changes and he really has done fantastic things, that's false. False. See? It's false. It's false, and since it's false, inherently it has no value. Moreover, practically speaking, it really can't hold up, and he's in for a big disappointment. But aside from the fact that he's in for a big disappointment, fact remains that it really, it's false. It's not really perfection. It's a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of knowledge. So what is the motivation? But Hillel, when he took away that motivation, which is really probably the greatest motivation that people really have, most people have, especially, yeah, people that come to a yeshiva especially, or they want to learn, or they want to be associated with Torah, or they want to prove themselves, the main motivation at the time is usually they want to be a certain, they want to have a certain change in themselves, they want to be a certain type of person. And they figure this is the place of the, or this is the method that's going to attain it for them. But it's not true. Not true.
What am I doing here?
So the good question. When he took away that motivation, he substituted a real motivation. What's the real motivation? What is the real motivation? Not for the satisfaction of being in line with a certain type of self-image. That's really what the general motivation is. But the real motivation is there's no choice. That's the real motivation. You simply have no choice. Do you want to live a more perfected life or a less perfected life? Now, a less perfected life is more miserable than a more perfected life. And therefore, a person must choose a more perfected life. But the more perfected life will not give you the satisfaction that you're looking for in terms of self-image. If that's your motivation, then you can forget about it. See? Then you can forget about it. Christianity is a religion that really caters to that emotion. That's the emotion, to become a saint. See? Pure, to be a pure individual, an individual with pure motives. You see? This is false. This is false. Of course, many people who are not Christians use the same motivation. That's why Christianity is successful. It's successful because it caters to a certain emotion that people have. That's why that's a tremendous success. It didn't take over countries in a period of days because of its great intellectual capacity. People didn't think about this too much. It just attracted them and they were convinced. So some powerful emotion, you see, was responsible for it. And that powerful emotion exists in everybody. But Yada says no. Yadis won't tolerate the falseness and demands of the person that he recognize that this concept is false. And as hard as it is to live in reality, he lives there because there is no choice. This is the way the situation is. You have complaints to God that he made it that way. It's a separate problem. This is the way it is. We have no right to discuss how it was made. No doubt, I mean, people, if it was up to people, they would create the world differently. See? That's the way it is. But we have to, we cannot expect reality to be in line with our emotions the way we see it. The only thing we can do, the only thing man can do, is to accept the reality and to act according to that given situation, that given reality. Mistake of quantity doesn't mean that we think we can change a lot, we can change a little. It means the whole image and the whole force behind the desire to change is the wrong one. That's a qualitative difference. It's not a quantitative, it's not a quantitative question of it. It's a qualitative difference. It's that, what is the problem really? Why can't man change? So Rabbeinu puts his finger on it. Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra menorah. What does it mean, Kiyetza Lev Adam Ramanura? Really, what is it? This pasuk had tremendous impact to Chazal. What does it mean? It means that man is predominantly motivated by instinctual, guided and controlled by instinctual forces. That's what it means. And not only is he controlled by instinctual forces, but he's controlled by instinctual forces to the degree that he's unaware of it. He's unaware of how these forces control him because he's not born with self-knowledge. Okay? Self-knowledge, like the Rambam says, that this species of man cannot be born perfected. Other species, they're perfected species. If you have canaries, you could have a canary that's born in a state that naturally will develop to a perfect bird. Right? This It's not that way. Man is not that way. There is no man that naturally will develop into the what man is supposed to be. There's only one way that man can change himself, and that's man can actually develop is through change, by changing himself. Okay. But now you see, the problem is like this. The problem is, since the instinctual is mainly what controls him, so many times when he thinks he's undergone a tremendous change, he's only swapped one instinct for another. It's changed. One satisfaction, one instinctual satisfaction for another instinctual satisfaction. But they're both instinctual. So whereas he thinks he's made such a tremendous change, truth of the matter is, that's it. He really didn't. It's still ki yetzer lev adam ra menorah. He's still being controlled by these forces. Only he doesn't know, he's not aware, and he thinks that he's made tremendous headway. He hasn't really gone too far. He's really just made a change in terms of which instinct this is controlling him. And now it's another instinct. He's bartering one instinct for another. But in terms of approaching truth and reality, he is just as far as he was before. See? Could be further. Right. The case that man is basically instinctual, and he can't really cause in himself tremendous changes. So the question is, how can he change at all? How can he change at all? What's the answer? The answer is, there is a small, very small amount of knowledge. See? Small amount of knowledge. There is a perception of knowledge. But in terms of his function, that perception of knowledge is so small and weak, like it can only exert itself at certain times, you see? And when the only thing, if you would just look structurally at the ratio, that knowledge will be completely wiped out. The only thing is that knowledge has a certain strength that the instincts don't have. And that is that once it really makes headway, that headway is kept. See, once it makes headway, it won't go back. Can't go back. So the question really is, what's more powerful, instincts or knowledge? What's the answer? The answer is, it depends. If you're talking about which is more forceful, which exerts a greater force, you see, it's really the instincts. The instincts exert such a great force that it will even prevent the mind from seeing certain things. It will even prevent the mind. In other words, when a situation arises, the instincts are right there immediately. They immediately attach themselves to the situation. They'll even block out the mind at the time, you see. They'll even block out the mind at the time. And they'll overpower the person, completely overpower. His knowledge is so small, it can't exert any influence at all. Wiped out. Completely wiped out. So at the time that a situation arises, the instinct is totally in control. There's only one thing, though. See, man has one important mitzvah. That's tshuva. What does tshuva mean? Tshuva means that he could function in a different state when the situation that attracts the powerful instincts is gone. And now he has the ability to focus with a small amount of mind that he has, you see. Because even that mind, you have to realize, even when it's focused in a situation, is also subject to instinctual influence. But there is a small amount that's capable of seeing reality. And that small amount can make and effectuate a little change. Not too powerful a change. Can't effectuate too powerful a change because of the fact that even at that moment, the instincts are still not asleep. They're still working. But it can see a certain aspect of the instinct, you see? And once it does catch one part of it, it clips off a part of it. That progress will never go back. See, that progress that it has made is a permanent one. Now it's in a better state, and it can make a little more progress. But the truth of the matter is that the sum total of progress that it could ever make is really very small. Very small. And that's why nobody is really out of the in Yadis, there's nobody that's really a perfect individual. Everybody is chayev and tshuva. kills everybody, even for Moshe Rabbeinu. So the reason is that no human being can really ever be completely above the instinctual. There is a part of man that is in line with reality, that does appreciate reality. There is such a part of man that does appreciate reality. If there was no such part of man, we would not have any shackles to reality. We'd never have any knowledge of psychology. We'd never have any knowledge of the external world or anything. See, there is a part of man that is capable of having knowledge, because it is in line with reality, because there is a certain love of truth. You see? That's the only thing that saves him. If there's real knowledge, the emotion can't affect it, because the real knowledge means knowledge of the good, of what is really the good. And once the person has real knowledge of what the good is, so then the desire will be for the good. Because essentially, everybody desires the good. There's no person that really wants to be evil. No person that wants to be evil, because evil is something which is wretched, which is really unhappy. No, who wants to be unhappy? So the thing is that the person makes a mistake in that he thinks that this is going to lead him to happiness. But if he really saw clearly through his mind's eye with 100% knowledge that this really is not going to lead, he'd see the emotion. He'd see, one second, this emotion, I'm looking for this emotion because I think I'm happy. One second, but that emotion knows exactly how it works, and he recognizes it experientially and also with knowledge, and he knows what it leads to, what the result is. There's no way that he's going to go after that. There's no way. You see? Because the person is after the person is after happiness. That's what a person wants. That's the underlying thing. The only thing is, everybody. The only thing is, the difference between a chacham and between a fool is that a chacham is after happiness, whereas a fool is after certain things which he is convinced are identified with happiness. You see? When they're not. That's the difference. But a chacham is willing to exchange the objects in his mind, because he realizes he's after happiness. But most people aren't even on that level. Like, to them, happiness becomes synonymous with the thing that they mistakenly identify with it, and they're after that thing now. Once they're after that thing, there's no way that you could change them, because that thing is happiness. See? Like, they used to have this little thing, happiness is whatever, you know, happiness is. Yeah, it's a statement, but the statement has meaning. They mean to say that there is an identification of happiness with this thing, and this object becomes the happiness. That's what's wrong. That's a person that's not a chacham. Stronger, this in two different senses. Dynamically, the instincts are stronger, but in terms of real real conflict, in terms of real gain, you see, when you have a conflict and there is a true gain, then knowledge is definitely stronger. Knowledge is stronger. The only thing is that the dynamics of the situation are such that conquests of happiness of the knowledge are very small. Describe it to you, but I can't really go through the experience with you. And the only thing happened to Chazal is that as a person perfects himself more, his knowledge, you see, the only way that a person can really gain knowledge is through honesty and through being in line with reality. Now, a person at first does not realize the extent of his instinctual makeup. He doesn't really understand Ki Yetzalev Ha'adam Ramin Urav. And the only way for a person to really achieve any gain is through the knowledge of how powerful the instincts are. So it comes out that he has this, what happens is he gets involved in a very strange journey. Because what happens, like, he starts out, he feels that the instincts are not really that powerful. He's going to subdue them with his knowledge. But then as he starts applying knowledge, knowledge demands that he learns more about the extent of the instinct. Now as he starts gaining knowledge, he starts seeing that it's much greater than he thought before, right? So what happens is that the more he gains knowledge, the more he sees how controlled he is by how powerful the instincts are. So the less self-estimation he has. So as he progresses, his self-estimation decreases. See? There's an inverse ratio. The greater he gets, the lower the self-estimation. That's why real perfection is, according to Yadis, is identified with Anivas. That's why real perfection is, that's right, is identified with Anivas. Has to be. It's not, yeah, that Anivas is a different kind of Anivas. It's not Anivas, it's not humility. So humility is a reaction formation to Gaiva. That's humility. It's not really, it's a realization. You know what I mean? It's a realization of the worthlessness of the individual based upon the internal structure of his nature. That's what it is. You see? That's a different kind of humility. Of Moshe Rabbeinu, the highest Shevach was V'ish Moshe Anu Miyah, the one Midah. That's the one Midah. Really, Anivus really is the natural reaction to the soul's partaking of knowledge. That's what it is. That's something which, you know, sometimes like you see something, and like take the Maran Avochim. Maran Avochim is a safer that, I mean, of course, like the Chumash, certainly that way, but, you know, Chumash, you expect it. But like safe like the Mara is a safer that you can't expect really to go through the safer from cover to cover and understand it. The only thing you can do is to have certain, expect that certain things will register. And then as years go on, you start seeing a little more. Certain things start opening up. See? Certain things start opening up. This mimer, you see, is one that has to be taken that way. And you can't really expect to understand this mimer fully. Because this mimer really, in order to understand this mimer, a person has to have gone through a certain amount of experience in terms of his own perfection. And it's impossible, yeah, years. And really, if a person, the difference between a person that's committed to Torah and a person that's not is that a person that's committed to Torah really goes on a different type of journey throughout his life. And he really starts, he sees different scenery. You know, you go on a trip, you start seeing different areas. And the average person, so a person that's evolving Torah really, they keep on changing and seeing. If the mind keeps working in the area, you keep on uncovering different things. Perfection is something which is a process that of change that goes on throughout a person's life. See, if a person's attached to this process, he has a different kind of life. And his mind works in a different way. The institutions of his mind are set up and operate, function differently. I mean, it's not the same prime mover. His soul doesn't have the same prime mover as an individual who's a regular individual. I mean, the prime mover of a soul is just certain emotional constellations. Now, he hit those emotions, he's going to act. But a person who's involved in perfection, his prime mover keeps changing throughout his life. I'll go through that more fully, how exactly that works. But the point is that a person who's really attached to perfection does go through different experiences that other people have no idea about. I mean, they don't know these things exist because they like I said, their journey stopped at a very early age, and that's it. They got off, and there's no change anymore. But a person who lives this life really sees different experiences, internal experiences, different things, and it takes time, and it takes, and it's a matter of mind, when the mind works on understanding the processes that take place and understanding the self more, the mind sees different phenomena that other people are completely unaware of. Now, this mimer is based upon those experiences. So you really can't expect to understand this mimer fully unless you have a certain amount of years of experience. It's something that a person should keep in mind, you know what I mean, as they travel through life. But if you're fortunate and if you really do live the life in the right way, you know, and you do take this road, so then you'll see how true it is. But it's not something that you could just expect to understand readily. It depends upon experience. Last part of the memory. Imlo achshav emasai. Shelo yomar, Rabbeinu Yonah says. Shelo yomar ani hayom osik b'mlachti. person shouldn't say, right now, today, I'm busy. L'mochor efne ve'esok v'asakin atzmi. Tomorrow I'll be free, I'll have time to change myself. Why shouldn't you say that? Ki shema lo sipona. Maybe you won't be free tomorrow. Big maybe. Vafilu im yifne hayom, vafilu im yifne, vafilu im yifne, and even if he will be free tomorrow, hayom ho chalaf, avar batlo, batlo son of lechas Hashem, lo yichol shalma kol yamav. I'll never be able to make up that day. Lo yichol shalma kol yamav, ki kol hayomim asher chay al adam, achayiv ulasak and atzma, ulasak mitzvah, zain lo, rishus li batlo melachta, filo shahachas. When the tree is growing when it's young, so you could straighten it out, it'll be a straight tree. Lo yakum. Alright, automate sort of means just like a tree, that depends upon how it is nurtured when it's young. Alright? The third thing, the tshuva when you're old is not really a good tshuva. Yibosos man in a yetzah chazak, la'taivan a kia, lo tarvel nefesh, vein lo chefes banos averos, v'zuhi yasiba elov l'tshuva, that's why he does tshuva. V'alein zen nemar, z'chos barachat mebechur asecha, adashel lo yavo yimei aroa. Okay, I will get back to that, the last idea. Alright, let's take what was the first idea? There's three ideas here. The first idea is that you shouldn't say, there's three concepts of Imlo Achshav Emasai. Three ideas of Imlo Achshav Emasai. First concept means that a person shouldn't say, today I'm busy with work, and tomorrow I'll really start working on myself. Alright? Why shouldn't he say it? Man is saying something that makes a lot of sense. You have to understand. The Chazal don't have to tell you, don't have to warn you against things that are stupid. You know, something stupid, you see yourself. What he means is like this. What he means is, what the man is saying is like this. What? The man is saying like this. Is it not true that perfection requires a tremendous effort? Not something which is done easily? Right? And isn't that true that in order to exert a tremendous effort, a person must have at his disposal all his energies? Right? Well, it would seem logical then, if you want to do the job properly, that a person should wait for the situation when he can really do this. Because, you see, Chazal, I'm talking about a stupid thing, because they say, Shemalotipana. What does it mean, Shemalotipana? Yeah, but apparently if you knew for sure that you would have it, so that would be the wise thing to do. So it would be the right? Right. No! There's something wrong with a person's attitude by saying, Im lo achshav emasai. You understand? Because then it would be a stupid thing. It says, Kishef ne'eshne, Shemalot tipana. See? So what does it mean? Over here he means in terms of changing himself. So it says Shemalot tipana. What does it mean? Shemalotipana means that it's really a good argument. But the only thing is that who knows you're gonna be, who knows you're gonna be free. But if you knew you're gonna be free, that would be the right thing. So apparently it is a good argument. They're not saying that the person has a crazy idea here and they're just trying to avoid the situation by saying, when I have time I'll do it, but they're not sincere. I don't have time now. Give me an excuse. Yeah, it's not giving an excuse. Giving an excuse. You don't want Shemalotipana? They should have said Vadalotipana. You know what I mean? No. They were talking about a person who's really serious and a person who's ready to engage in himself in a tremendous battle of changing himself. Now, such a person is really ready, so he'll say, I'll wait for a better time. That's a logical argument. I'll wait for a time when I can really summon all my resources together. I really can get involved in this. And right now, to start in a half-hearted way is not really a good thing to do. That's really what Chazal are talking about. Yes? Chazal says, Shema lo tipone. What does it mean, Shema lo tipone? It means maybe you won't, but if you knew for sure that you would be free tomorrow, you'd be foolish to start today. Why would you be foolish to start today? Tell me, start today anyways. The answer is because if you're going to start in a half-hearted way, you're much better waiting for a situation where you can really get involved in it. You're starting a half-hearted way, right. It's not going to be effective. On the contrary, it has a bad effect on you. And the wind up frustration is it. So you're better off waiting for a situation where you can really do it. Chazal don't say that it's a bad thing. You see? As a matter of fact, it's a question on the Rabbeinu Yonah, because Rabbeinu Yonah says, he says you can, and moreover, you won't be able to make up that day. He says, "Kishem Osman, afilu miyfne, miyfne hayom hu cholaf over." But what do you mean, afilu miyfne? Chazal say shemaloti pana. That's the reason, not because afilu miyfne. They don't give that reasoning. Rabbeinu Yonah is difficult. How can Rabbeinu Yonah go against the Chazal? The Chazal say openly shemaloti pana. Al tamer kishefne ashne shemaloti pana. Right. Out over here. I mean, why? What's wrong with the argument? What? Talking about a person that every person, you know, I'll do a little something today. It's very nice, you know. It's like saying I'll put a little quarter in the Zucker box. Very nice. But we're talking about real change over here. We're talking about big change. We're not talking about a person. The average person isn't involved in what Chazal is talking about. Good to get involved in unless you could do it properly. And to do something in an improper way could be worse sometimes than not doing it at all. So when Chazal say, your involvement here. Of course, a person should always try to do whatever he can. That's no question. We're talking about the major involvement here. Major involvement, you're better off waiting. So what's the Shema Lo Tipana? Shema Lo Tipana. He says, Kiena toyodea kilo seida mayolid yom. Vagam lamacha yikri lacha. Ki chadosh yasem. Okay. So you see, so you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know.
You might not.
Yeah. No. Some people who have that plan, you're taking a risk. Right, you're taking a risk. So what's the shot? And how, moreover, how could Rabbeinu Yonah say, and even if you are free, he says still every day you have to be mechuyav. What do you mean every day you're mechuyav? The Chazal don't say. The Chazal says Shema lo tipana. Why, right, does Rabbeinu Yonah have to come in and say, no, well, you have an obligation every day. So why does Chazal say Shema lo tipana? I should have said, Atomik shefne eshne ki atachayev b'chol yom, like Rabbeinu Yonah says. No, they don't say that. They say Shema lo tipana. You know, it's a contradiction. What's the answer? And how can Rabbeinu Yonah argue with Chazal? I mean, it's not with Chazal. First of all, he explains the Chazal to mean, right? What's the shot? The thing is like this. You see, the truth of the matter is that a person has, emotionally, has a certain sense of certain feelings about reality that aren't true. See, one of those feelings... Oh, really, it's the same type of thing. But the feelings that are involved in here are as follows. First of all, that I want to do a perfect job, you see? And secondly, that since I want to do this perfect job, and it even involves God, God will make sure that I'll have the time to be able to do it in the right way, Be'ezer Hashem, you see? That's the way a person thinks? Not true. Why? A person must be able to look at cold reality. So your person is put here to be able to just to use his mind to judge reality and make decisions based upon the reality he finds himself in. And that's part of his whole Bechira. See? These assumptions that a person makes that God will help me in this and help me in that is wrong. Vayehi David b'chol d'rachav maskil v'rashamim. Maskil means just pure seichel. Which means a person has to realize, I'm put here, there's only one thing I can do in this life. That's attain a certain perfection. But now I have to take a look at what's in front of me. I mean, different things could happen, you know. There's no security. I have no security. God placed me in a situation where I don't know what might happen to me. I have to look at the reality of the situation. Reality is that certain things can occur, that can occur. I have to take this into consideration. There's not a time to have betochen. Betochen is a false emotion in this situation. A person has to be able to look at cold reality and be able to work out what is really the best way for me to increase my chances of attaining perfection. And he has to work according to that probability. You see, because that's the reality. That's the reality that confronts him. Now, what Rabbeinu Yonah says is like this, that a person doesn't like to live in accordance with that reality. A person doesn't like to recognize that there is a cold reality in front of him, that he has to work his perfection out in terms of that cold reality. A person would rather like to think that there's a force that's guiding him towards perfection, is going to protect him as long as he has the right intentions. But it's wrong. That's the emotion that makes the person think, Al tomar kesha efne eshna. Why? Because the person says, look, I definitely want to change. And the proper thing is to wait until I have a situation where I can summon all my energies to get involved in this thing. Right? And God will help me. He'll make sure that I'll have the time will come. I'll have the freedom to do it. What do you mean? What do you mean God will make sure that so? You know that God is going to do this? You have no knowledge of that. You see? There's a certain false emotion, you see, which really disguises itself as a religious emotion, which can fool a person into thinking that way. Shema lo tipana. There's a reality out there. The reality is that it might not occur. That might not happen. Do you have any guarantee that's going to happen? It'd be very nice to think that since you have a good intention, that God's going to help you and you're going to be able to do it. But who says that's so? Your obligation is to deal with the reality and within the framework of reality work out your perfection. And within the framework of reality, that's not true. Because if you look at it realistically, you'll see that there is no real difference between your involvements today and in the future. You have no way of knowing. And the reason your involvements are based on a certain situation that you find yourself in. And if you took a realistic evaluation, you'd see that the chances are that this might not occur. Like the Gemara says, a person must do tshuva a day before he dies. So the Gemara says, Miyadeya kamachayi. How does the person know how long he's going to live? The Gemara says, yeah, do it every day. Right? Okay. Same thing Gemara says with regard to a person should learn yashlish adam limuda. What does it mean? He should learn shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishna, shlish b'gemara. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? I learned 20 years Mishnah and 20 years Gemara. How do I know how long I'm going to live? No, every day. What does that mean? That means that Chazal really recognized the person must live with the idea, realistic idea, that tomorrow something can happen to him. He could die. He cannot be here. That's reality. It's not in line with a person's emotional makeup, because a person's emotions tend to deny this reality. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you can't wipe out the emotion. The person can't just change himself. But he has to live in accordance with reality. And that's the same thing that the Chazal was saying over here. What Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. See? Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that there is a false emotion that lets a person think that soon God is going to give him the time when he's going to be able to improve himself. God willing, God will help me, I'll be able to do it. What do you mean? Do you know what's going to be in reality? You have no idea. And your perfection is based upon using your seichel in terms of the realistic framework that God placed you in. And if you look at it realistically, you see your chances are very slim. So therefore, based upon probability, you shouldn't wait for that. Actually, if you assess the situation realistically, you would not wait. Because you see the chances are very slim. That's what it means, Shema Lo Tipana. Shema Lo Tipana means that you must make the realistic evaluation. That conclusion will lead you to the fact that you must immediately take action, even though it's not the best situation. Because the best situation for a person to make a really drastic change in his life would be one in which he's free, he could sit down calmly, he could summon all his energies to really make this change. That would be the best way to do it. But reality dictates that since that situation doesn't appear to be probable, you'll have to settle for something that's less. You see? Again, really, it's tied in very closely with Emein Ani Li Mi Li V'Uchshani Latzmi Mani. Because the main motivation that drives people to improve themselves is really that they want a certain happiness, a certain contentedness with a certain self-image that they want. So they want to feel that they're really living according to, in line with this self-image. This self-image of perfection. which Rabbeinu Yonah says in what did he say? In that self-image will never be satisfied, because on the contrary, the more knowledge that a person gains, the more he realizes how corrupt his nature is. And similarly, over here also, this comes from the same motivation. What is that motivation? To have the perfect situation where he can really perfect himself, so be completely in line with his idea of what he should be. See? Now, reality dictates that is wrong. Now, you have to start in a way that's not so perfected, but you won't achieve that great level. But reality dictates you better start doing it now, because you don't know what the situation is going to bring about. And don't believe that would be a false bitachon. Bitachon that the Eivish is going to help me, that I'll have a situation, I'll really be able to. That's false. False. What God wants you to do, maskil means that you must use your knowledge in assessing the situation that you have before you. And that situation dictates that the imperfect situation is one that you should avail yourself of. Not wait for the perfect. That's why Rabbeinu Yonah adds, he says, even if you would, you chayev every day to perfect yourself. Why you chayev every day to perfect yourself? Because of this reasoning. Precisely because of this reasoning. That's why the chiv is established that way, because the reasoning is. Because you don't know. Yeah, because a realistic evaluation situation would really conclude that you should get involved now.
April 10th, 1983.
Man was a lazy man. So what do you expect? Go by his field, you're not going to see a well-mowed lawn. I mean, what do you think? That the thistles are growing and it's completely covered with weeds and the stone wall is broken down. What is what's the Musa Haskell? What's the Musa Haskell? What does it mean? What's the Musa Haskell? Really a simple idea, but what's the basic idea? In fact, the man's lazy. He's not going to take care of his vineyard, right? So what do you think? The grapes are going to take care of themselves? I mean, of course, the weeds start growing. Nobody's there to pull them out. Naturally, after a while, what are you going to have? This is a big Musa Haskell. After a while, you're going to have the places. The weeds are very happy, thriving, and the vineyard is half dead or completely gone, whatever. What's the Musa Haskell? And he throws in that the fence is broken down.
This is a pasuk in Mishlei Perek Chaf Dalet.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. It's very busy. It's not referring to. It's referring to a person who's the reason why this is so is because of laziness, not because he's involved in something else. That wouldn't be. In other words, he's talking about a person who the reason why things are. Things are the way they are is because he's lazy. Say no. I mean, the man is it's worth it. It's not worth it for him to take care of his garden or whatever, and he's in the backyard sleeping in a hammock, enjoying himself. Two ways to approach a subject. One is from the universals, logically. And the other way is from when you grab a hold of a particular aspect that you can apprehend. So he says many times you can't just go approach a subject from general, start off a science in order the way it should be. The human mind doesn't always get a firm grasp on everything. You have to settle for what you can apprehend. So over here, let's try to understand from the case. Yeah. What is? What do you mean? You're right when you said you let it all go to waste. That's the key. What it means is like this. What it means is laziness, basically, is an irrational, when a person is irrational with regard to the expenditure of his energies. That's what laziness is. It's when he's irrational with regard to the expenditure of his energies. What the pasuk means is like this. Pasuk means that really, to keep up the vineyard, there was a vineyard there, right? To keep up the vineyard would have required a minimal amount of effort. If every day he put in a few minutes, he would have had the whole vineyard, you see? But what happens is that he can't,
He's irrational with regard to the expenditure of minimal expenditure of energy, and therefore what happens is that there's a progressive gain on the part of the destructive forces in the garden, so that finally it comes out that the loss is tremendous. You see, the loss is tremendous because the other forces gain on it. They gain progressively. All he would need would be a minimal of effort to keep the weeds down. Naturally, once he lets it go, so then it requires more energy to keep it down. And the moment it's not proportional anymore. It's not a proportional situation. That's the point. In other words, if he lets it go for a month, he can't. That's right. If he lets it go for a month, he will not be able to in one day spend the whole day 8 hours and spend the same 8 hours that would have taken him if he break it up over the month. See, because what happens is that the deterioration keeps progressing. In geometric progression. So therefore, what happens is that by the time he gets around to it, it will require tremendous effort. So he's irrational with regard to his expenditure of energy. See, and that's why he says like this. The whole thing was completely destroyed already. See? And then he says, the geder avonov nersov. What does the fence represent? Why does he mention that the stone wall is broken down? What does that represent? In fact, the stone wall is broken down. Because the thing is that when do people break down a stone wall? When it's a wasteland. So that's there again. You have another destruction, which results from the fact that it's in a destructive state already. It shows the progression. In other words, the fact that it didn't take care of it, that minimal bit of effort that would have kept it in place, in time, so then natural progression. But then the destruction itself leads to other destruction. That's a progression within the system itself. Okay? But then there's something else. Once this system goes, now another system goes. Because nobody identifies this place as belonging to anybody. So they bang things into the wall, they let their cattle go on the wall, it breaks it down, knocks down the wall. So one thing leads, the first destruction leads to a secondary destruction. And that's why that's the chasalev. The chasalev means that he's completely irrational. Look what the man lost. The man lost a tremendous piece of property. Why? Because he didn't have the control to be rational with regard to his expenditure of energy. Could have done it in a minimal way. That's the pasuk. Now it's interesting, but the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah equates that. You see, Rabbeinu Yonah says that's the same thing with the soul. He says, "Kol shkeinim lo yitrach tishar nafsho reiko min hamitzvos kimo sada ziburius im lo yitrach bo ve lo yizvulenu lo yitzim en hashim davar ze nema al sada ish al sada ish atel avarti vol kam adam chas alev nek lo ala kulo kimshonim kosufon al charulim ve getavon al nesa." Okay, so what is he saying? He says the exact same thing. Since it's the exact same thing, it shows you that with regard to the human soul, that's also the same situation. Really, the mashal is regard to the soul. Flamel didn't care about the guy having a nice garden. But the mashal is with regard to the important thing in life, the essence of man. So it means that a person who doesn't really... a person who lets his soul go, doesn't really take care of it, so the wild forces in the soul start taking over. Once they start taking over, then it becomes a total destruction. And one destruction leads to another destruction after that. That's the same way it is with man. That's the mashal. That's the nimshal. The nimshal is the soul. Nimshal is with regard to the soul. Now the nature of the soul is that there are powerful forces that thrive there, and once these forces gain control and he loses, then it becomes it's like a geometric progression. He can't grab hold of it anymore.
What's the reason why
that one? Says that why does he mention it over here? He says that one of the... We'll see what kind of a motivation is. It's true. The essence of what he's saying is that that's the same motivation. That's the same motivation. That laziness is the motivation, is a big motivation in a person not perfecting himself. We have to define why it is that way. But you're right, that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. That the emotion of laziness is really a powerful force in preventing a person from reaching perfection. We have to understand precisely what laziness is. I mean, you're right, Mike. I mean, that's true. We have to get down to what it is. But we can't get down originally. We have to trace it back. We have to trace it back. Okay? What the emotion, what the desire is, what that emotion of laziness is. Yes? And what it means by this day Yishotzel, when the whole thing is gone, it means now it's not worth anymore. Now it's not worth anymore. Now the whole, it's like the field lost its value. It's completely gone. It's too late. So you're starting over again. Might as well buy another field. Doesn't even pay anymore. It's gone. Okay. You expend. Yes. What the Arbanion says is that you see, it's a very interesting. That's the main point.
Here's a great question because it seems that even
you said last time the thing is what motive. We mentioned this last time that the motivation is not really the real motivation of the Chacham is not the fantasy. The fantasy recognizes out of reach, but the real motivation of the Chacham is that he has no choice. There's no choice. It can only be worse. The only thing, in other words, is when a person starts out initially for perfection, he has a fantasy of perfection. When a person is a real Chacham, the fantasy of perfection is gone. He only recognizes one thing, that he has to do it. That's what the Ben Yonah says. He has to do it. There is no other way. Okay. Let's go a little further. I will get back to this. What it means, why Shlomo Melech says really that the underlying motivation is laziness. Because what is laziness? Laziness really is not something that's easily defined. What I told you is basic definition, it's an irrational expenditure of energy. That's true. But that's not really what the essential cause is. That's really just description of it. You know what I mean? It's really a description of it. Okay. Truth of the matter is, when you analyze, you find that really there's no such thing as what people call common laziness. There's no definition for that. All right. Let's go a little further. Maybe we'll get back to find out what it is. Now he says like this. Im lo achshav emasai, right? So we did the first part. And now he says, v'od yesh b'chlal zeh ha'loshan im lo achshav b'imei na'aretz emasai. He says, and now there's another meaning over here. He says, also, and the Rambam mentions this. He says, "Im lo achshav" means if I don't perfect myself now when I'm young, "Im adzikna v'seva yanichena," if he waits until he gets older, "Lo yuchal lasoso," he will not be able to do it. "Va'al inyan zeh al madavar avar shalom, asher bonenu kinetoyim megadlin binurehem." It's a pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk and Tehillim. It's a funny pasuk. Asher b'neinu kinetiyim megudolim binureihem b'noseinu kizavios nechutavos tavnes hechol. All right. So he says, what does it mean? It means literally. It means that our sons are like these growths, plants that are that in their youth. Okay. So he says like this. He says, I mean, Ratzalam, I can't neta. The growth, Bodenu Koton, Odom Yochol Lagadlo, Lios Eitz, Yosha. Person can, when he's young, he could bend it to the way he wants, to make it straight. Velo ye akum. Ach, lachasha, godl be kumo. Heyoso kosha. Alright. Right, v'chein adam ba'odenu katan b'kalu lios b'derech tov v'losur min ora avalim hiskin b'risho kasha b'einav lahanicha kemoshe kasav chanoch l'nar al pidarko gam ki yazkin la yosur mimena uksiv ki adam eitz asada. An interesting thing. So what does he say? He says that that a person is like, he equates a person to a young plant. That when it's young, it can be molded shaped any way the person wants. But once it gets older, it gets hard, so it can't shape it. What is the nimshal over here? How does it work with regard to a person, or with regard to a human being, I mean?
shame.
You don't say one thing though. I mean, in Yadis we don't really respect an older person. I want you to understand that. I mean, there's no halacha that you have to respect the person that's 45 if you're 15. There's no halacha like that. The only halacha is to respect the chacham. There is a machlokes with regard to if a person is 70 years old, whether you have to stand up for it. Ram Paskin should do, even a guy. Because that's a different thing though. Because Kama Pati of Allah doesn't mean he's a chacham, but it represents a birkas Hashem. That the man was granted a certain amount of experiences through which he could perfect himself. But you don't stand up, but there's no halacha to respect his opinion. Because we don't respect the opinion of our elders. That can be a very harmful thing, to respect your elders. Because we just respect your elders indiscriminately. So some people, just because they've been around a certain amount of years, I mean, they feel that they're entitled to the honor and distinction of wisdom. But it doesn't work that way. It's not how long the person has been. I mean, he's been a fool for many years. An old fool. I mean, no reason to... yeah. The fact that a person is old doesn't mean. And it's only chachma to respect. But it's only chachma. As a matter of fact, that's a bad thing that they teach the kids. If the child's right and the old person is wrong, so the child's going to feel that he has to correct his way of thinking because of this older person. You know, I mean, the older person doesn't know how to think properly. He's been thinking the wrong way for many years, and he's very good at it. And therefore, he's going to destroy the child. No, it's a bad principle. It should be respect your chacham and not respect your elders. It's a very bad thing to teach children. Matter of fact, that's responsible. I believe that principle is responsible for most of the destruction of good minds. Because it's a process of intimidation, basically. It's intimidation. Somebody's older than you. He's bigger than you. He's older than you. Child has to listen. It's wrong. Bad. Yes. No, the child should not be taught to respect his elders. He should be taught to respect those who are wiser than him. And he should be taught to have respect for knowledge. Now, since human beings can recognize knowledge, so a child can recognize when something is said to him that makes sense, and that he sees that in terms of the mechanism of his mind, that part of his mind that searches for knowledge, he sees that he's deficient and somebody else has a greater ability. This the child to recognize. This is what he should be taught to respect, not the fact that somebody's older. What? How does it work? Let's understand what the psychological principle is that's responsible for this characteristic. What's the principle? Like this. Well, Leslie said what? The tree? Now, Leslie mentioned one thing. He mentioned that there's a... that the person has a certain pride with regard to his self. And therefore, the older he gets and the more he's lived a certain way, the harder it is for him to admit the fact that this has been a tremendous waste. When he's young, he doesn't have much invested. So, therefore, he's open to investigation because he really doesn't have much of an investment. But if he's older already, he's made a certain investment, and it would require tremendous courage to be able to say that everything he's done has been a waste. And he has to admit that part of his life has been lost. That's true. There's no question about that. That definitely is true. Psukim, that is something in the inherent nature of man over here. You know what I mean? It's not just a matter of pride. Something in the inherent nature of man that we're talking about. Yeah. Same, it would seem that the nature of a person is that his desire is for enjoyment. That's what his desire is. His desire, he always has to have a satisfaction. Whatever course he may take, see, he always must have satisfaction. So every day in different lifestyles, there are different satisfactions. Now the thing is, it would seem that the nature of man is such that once he is attached to a satisfaction, he cannot remove himself from it. It's not easy to remove himself from it. Because the energy, the psychic energy, has already made certain roots, established certain trends, and it recognizes the fact that whenever it goes along those trends, there's some satisfaction at the end of the line. So what happens is that it becomes very difficult to withdraw, to change those roots, that have been established. You see. Now, before they're established, really, he's pliable. He can go this way, he can go one direction, he can go another direction. That's what he means. Bechanoch l'nal pidarko gam ki yaskin layosar mimena. Why? Because once you establish the roots for his psychic energy to take, you see, and he goes that way several times, then the mind always identifies these, is attached, that this is the pleasure. In other words, the pleasure at the end of the root becomes identified with the root itself. No, well, whatever, there's always certain satisfactions. Whatever lifestyle it is. Whatever, the person can't exist without having satisfaction. Has to be satisfaction. Person is, has to have some type of pleasure. Whether it's a, whatever type of emotional pleasure it is, but there's some satisfaction. No matter what lifestyle a person chooses, there has to be some satisfaction. There's no other possibility. Now, what happens is like this, that, and that's really, you see, that's really the difference between a person that is a chacham and between the average person. The chacham really, the chacham is not attached to the process itself. The chacham really is looking for happiness. Chacham is looking for happiness per se. Well, but the average person is not looking for happiness per se. He's looking for certain objects which he identifies with happiness. See, those objects have been since why is it so difficult really to make a change in a person? What's difficult is the fact that the person, everybody's looking for happiness. They tell him, look, I'll prove to you that you'll be happier this way. And let's say you show him rationally that it's the right way, definitely work out. He won't change so easily. Why? Because the objects that he has already identified with as being the source of happiness, they become happiness themselves. And therefore, he can't remove himself from those objects. Whereas a chacham really recognizes that the ultimate objective is that. Why is it difficult for a person to change his nature? Say, look, materialism is nothing. I mean, a lot of people know it. A lot of people are aware. The answer is because materialism already, he's already achieved a certain satisfaction with this materialism. Now the materialism itself becomes identified as happiness. And even if you show him rationally he's not really happy, but he can't really he can't change it. Because the route through which his emotions take to seek satisfaction, you see, and there is some satisfaction there, that route already has been established that this is the good. This is the good. And now he can't possibly change and reestablish what the good is, because the satisfaction has come from these things. But he's not going to be able to change it so easily. He's not going to be able to change it so easily. What happens is there is a cementing of the objective, the philosophical good, with the particular thing that he used to achieve certain amount of satisfaction. And even the pleasure, even though the pleasure may be small, and the pleasure may involve more pain than pleasure itself, but the fact is that he has attained some type of pleasure over there, so he can't let it go anymore, because this pleasure becomes identified with the good. Once it becomes identified with the good, now you're showing, you say that, well, look, my friend, what do you have to knock yourself out and do all this? You'd be very happy by changing your nature and recognizing that happiness is much more easily attainable through a different route. He can't do it because this, he can't give this thing up. Why can't he give this up? It's like a nightmare to him to give this up, because this has become the good already. Once the expenditure of energy has taken place along those lines, that object already becomes identified with the good. That, I think, is the most difficult thing that a person encounters if he wants to change. That is the most difficult thing. See, that conviction comes from the fact that the good has become identified already with a certain object. Can't change it. That's Chanoch l'nal pidarko gam ki yaskin l'yasser mimeno. He won't change. He will not change. It means it, what? Well, the part of the pasuk he's referring to. Now, once the roots have been established already of how his enjoyments take place, it's going to be very difficult for him to forfeit one of those enjoyments. Okay. in a certain, his mind is already identifies, like it becomes the root becomes cemented, and he can't change anymore. Becomes one, the good and the object that he used, the vehicle becomes one, and he can't change it. Every person, whenever he does something, has to have one thing in his mind. What is this thing good? Whenever he does it, he always has to say, this is good. A person, by nature, has a category in his mind that no animal has. And that category is the good. He has a concept of the good. Now, whatever he does in life, he always tries to identify with that good. Why are you doing this? This is good for me. There's an idea of the good. That's why all these, the philosophers, what is the good? Plato discusses what is the good. Pasuk, the Navi says, Higid lecho adam matayv. Matayv. What is the good? What is the good? Higid lecho adam matayv. Every person, a human being, has in his mind, he's searching for one thing, the good. And whatever he does, no matter what it is, he'll say, this is good. There's a concept of the good. You see. Now, actually, rationally, a person should just look for the good. See? And he should be free to be able to choose his means. And if I find a better means for the good, then I should be able to do that. But the problem is that once, that's why Chazal say that the Yetzalei Yilev Adam Ra Menura, that the problem is that the instincts have a head start. The instincts have a head start on the intellect. So what happens is that the instincts already establish certain patterns. See? And he senses certain satisfactions. Now the mind comes along and says, just a second, this root is a bad root. Too late. Can't do anything about it. Because the root has been established, and he has already identified that thing with the good, because he has obtained a certain amount of pleasure from it. And the pleasure fixes in his mind these two things. It becomes fixed. That's what happens. That's the way a person's nature is. That is the difficulty. That is actually the greatest difficulty, I think, in a person's life. If he wants to make a change, this is the greatest difficulty he encounters. I think it's something else. I think it's one thing that you have to make one distinction here. If you talk about older people, you have to realize that the average older person is just set. He's just set. He's not capable of change anymore. He's not capable of change anymore. But it doesn't necessarily mean that a perfected person will find himself in that same situation. So since a perfected person is one who is always in the process of searching and changing, so when he reaches old age, doesn't necessarily, he's not going to become fixed. Age per se. He's not the age per se. What is responsible for that? I mean, it's a good question. What is responsible for that? I think that there's a certain, see, I'll tell you, you're talking about, there's a certain phenomena. Like if you'll see a young person, a teenager, you're seeing a young person 18 years old, you'll know right away, you could talk to him, and you can get him interested in different ideas. Might even be a wild idea, he'll be interested. An older person, you know, you can forget about it. Okay? What has happened here is like this. The truth of the matter is that a young person, really, when he starts off, he has a certain natural inquisitiveness and adventurous spirit. But what happens is that when a person gets bombarded, the average person who is unsuccessful in life in bringing about a state where he could satisfy his early desires. See, what brings about this adventurous state? It's really a desire to satisfy many urges and many different things. So he thinks different possibilities. What happens is the average person in life gets bombarded and he sees that he just can't possibly be successful. So he comes to a certain conviction. The conviction is that things just go along day by day and that's it, you know, and there's he's already been, he's been traumatized, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like he can't even imagine any change or any type of anything that's, he's been disappointed so many times, you see, that he's resigned to his fate, that this is the way things are, and that's it. That's the level of the satisfaction. See? Yeah. He's compromised. In other words, originally a person wants to, he really wants to have a good life, and he wants to satisfy his desires. But if he usually works out that he's not successful, because since he tries to do it through materialistic means, it doesn't work. So he becomes resigned to his fate. This is life, and that's it. And he Once he develops that outlook, you see, and he actually believes that this is the way it is, now there's very few exciting things that are going to happen to him in life. He's already.